Amen. Thanks so much, Krista. And for Brian, you may not have realized if you were opening a pew Bible or not, but Brian kind of went on a whole little rabbit trail through three chapters of Samuel to kind of get a gist of the long story about that prophet's origin in serving God. And thank you so much, choir. Really lovely, energetic anthem today. Perfect for the weather, right, to get us in that mood. And hopefully we can keep riding that high through the sermon if you can make it, and then through the meeting later today too. I especially love that little kind of like slide at the end. I don't know what you call it exactly, but something going through all the names. Okay. I have a little bit of music theory. I should be better, but my vocal stuff's bad. But that was really fun. So one of my favorite TV shows when I was growing up, when I was little, was Reading Rainbow. And some of you may be familiar with that one as well. I not only liked the books that they would read and have that you'd be able to watch along with, but also they would normally have LeVar Burton, the host, going through with some other kind of adventure or exploration in the real world that connected to the theme of the books in some way, and I thought those were great as well. And one of the ones that sticks out in my head especially was a time that he went and met a family that was responsible for some of the biggest fireworks shows in the United States. Almost everyone in the business doing the fireworks displays was a member of the family, and it was a really big business. It was a big family, too. There were brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents, the whole nine yards. And this had been going on as a family business for generations, so there was, you know, probably three or four generations active in the business at the time, but this had gone back maybe another three or four generations before that, even into the 1800s, doing these fireworks. And people were participants in the family business, not only for making the fireworks themselves, but for all other elements of it as well. So there'd be people that wrote or arranged music, that helped with event planning for when they'd go to a particular event, for doing advertising, and then even some, maybe especially the kids, were doing support roles, like making food for these giant crew of people to make an event happen, making clothes that had their logo and were fire retardant and things like that. And one of the really interesting dynamics I remember coming up in the story as we were going through following them along is what it can be like when you are working on passing things between all of these generations. Now, I was at the age of watching Reading Rainbow like in the late 80s, early 90s. And so what was happening is one of the adult grandkids was very excited about this new technology called computers. And he was sure that they might be able to run some of their slideshows on computers in the next few years. And he wanted to be on the cusp of all of this, right? And so now, naturally, I think everyone does probably run those shows on computers, and it's very sophisticated and everything. At the time, they were running it on something kind of like the light board that Corey uses with different cues and buttons that they'd push for different things. So it was not just like people running out there and like lighting something and then running away again real fast or anything like that, but still not as fancy as a computer. And so he was having these discussions of excitement about this is this new thing we could be a part of. And some people were nervous, but I remember he had this conversation with, I think it was a great aunt, where she was saying, yeah, I understand you're excited and it's good to see about progress, but she was saying that she wanted to make sure that everyone remembered. She was worried that the more that things get sort of automated and fancy, that the less likely that people remember to do some of the very traditional safety measures that even go back to when people were very close to the fireworks as they were going off, because she never wanted anyone to get hurt. She said, we just have to make sure we don't forget all of those traditional things that keep everyone safe. And that came to mind for me this week. It might seem like a strange connection, but I was studying some of the commentaries and translations about our passage for Jesus this morning, and one of the things I think that sticks out to folks in this story is when Mary is coming to Jesus and saying, oh my gosh, you had us so worried, what are you doing? And Jesus seems sort of surprised, right, and says, well, of course, wouldn't you know that I would be in my Father's house? That's one of the verses that, if you know the story, often pops out for people. But as it turns out, there's a lot of scholars that say that based on how most people would handle their livelihood at the time, where you're doing a lot of your livelihood in your business out of your home, so the connection between household and the things that you're doing as a person are very closely linked, that probably the closer translation of the original language in that passage is not like I'd be in my father's house, meaning like I'd be inside this place, but that I would be about my father's business. So that can be something that happens in the household, but that the emphasis is actually more on I'm doing the things that my father is about. And that helps us too remember that a big part of Jesus' message throughout his ministry as he got older was to remind us that God is also not just contained in four walls of any particular building, but that God's temple, God's house, God's business happens everywhere. And so that made me think about family businesses. And for me, at least, I don't have very many family businesses in my family. So this reading Rainbow Story is the first thing that came to mind about what it's like when you have that dynamic. The past few weeks, we've been doing what I'm sort of calling these Christmas bonus passages, right? Scriptures that happen very early in Jesus' life. We don't always look at them throughout the rest of the year for those reasons. And they also don't really get covered at Christmas because it's not the classic nativity stories. But we can have a chance to learn some important things when we see what it's like when God comes to earth and even has those interactions before Jesus' more official, famous ministry. So on Christmas Eve, we saw not only that the Magi show up to visit Jesus, but we saw what can seem like those defeatist things of Jesus fleeing to Egypt after the Magi came and visited. And then last week, we looked at Jesus' encounter with Simeon and Anna when his parents dedicated him in the temple about a week after he was born. These stories give us very unique examples of Jesus interacting with different people and circumstances, and so hopefully they really do help us learn what God cares about most. And that includes even all the way up to now in interacting with us. And so what can be important for us to continue to remember to be about God's business ourselves today? We've looked at how God was emphasizing being empowering, and especially encountering people who might have otherwise been seen as not very powerful, rather than using the values of empire. So God was about connecting with shepherds and Simeon and Anna, not about being a conqueror like Caesar or Herod that were coming after the babies. We've thought about how God invites everyone for participation and perseverance and passing things along. And again, whether that's lowly shepherds or fancy magi, no matter what generation someone is a part of. And that's especially true even if we sometimes worry. I see God moving. I see maybe even something new or different happening. Am I going to have a place in that, or is this going to pass me by? So I think this idea of family business is a really compelling metaphor for what it means to follow God, especially because it brings to mind the connections that we can have between different generations and life stages, like a family business often goes all the way through, and how we can value foundations while also continuing to develop new things. And at the heart of our passage today, it really gets at some of the complex dynamics that are at play in those intergenerational interactions. They're not just trying to get us to think about something like, ooh, wasn't Samuel so impressive or wasn't Jesus so impressive because they connected with God when they're little. The relational dynamics with family and other people is just as, if not more, important. These stories will meet us even in the tensions that happen with that, even in the worry that people can feel as those interactions are happening. And especially if we think, what does it look like to hold the past and the future together in the present? The first thing that jumps out with this dynamic is how Mary and Joseph were navigating Jesus' growing independence as he was getting older, right? They're obviously comfortable with some level of him doing his own thing because they let him kind of go around in the big party that came down together, probably extended family and friends coming down from Nazareth to Jerusalem for the special Passover holiday. He didn't have to stay right next to them holding hands or anything like that. He could go to maybe his cousins or other people that he knew. But there was still some expectation, like there's a boundary of reasonableness and safety that you need to hold on to here, Jesus, because they had some level of comfort that they felt had been violated, clearly, when they talked to Jesus later, with him making plans on his own without talking to them or communicating with them in some way, assuming that they would understand. That made Mary and Joseph kind of uncomfortable. And many of us can probably relate to what Mary and Joseph were likely going through when they realized that Jesus was doing his own thing and moving outside of those expectations that they had. I'm sure any of us, either who have had kids or have kids in our lives, have seen these types of things happen. Where we're like, all right, you kind of do need to grow up, but the way that this is going makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. I want to keep my eye on things. And they weren't just disappointed in his behavior or frustrated that they had been inconvenienced. They went deeper to a level of concern that by Jesus going outside of their expectations, that he was putting himself at risk. And maybe that they feared the worst and even felt the sense of loss, like, oh my gosh, we can't find him. What if actually the worst has happened and something horrible has happened to Jesus? That's a horrible feeling to have as a parent or a loved one. And by the way, we can notice that Luke really wants us to think about that sense of loss in the way that he makes sure to frame certain details in the story. This is especially true for Mary. It's sort of a foreshadowing story in many ways for Luke. You may have noticed that this is happening at the celebration of Passover. Jesus is coming into Jerusalem for that holiday. You may have noticed that it takes 3 days of wondering and loss and where is Jesus before his parents eventually find him again. And that is supposed to help us think ahead in the story to Good Friday and to Easter, that ultimately we are supposed to be humble before God. We're supposed to relinquish our own control and preferences. We're supposed to be part of salvation life that includes all kinds of people and lasts beyond all generations, because Jesus, in following God, in doing his own thing, ultimately had to humble himself the same way, ultimately did experience loss, but that doesn't mean that there was a violation of what God wanted to do and that we're called to follow Jesus. And so even though those things, those fear of loss, that wonder, are you going astray, are things going to work out, that's a natural reaction that we see happening, especially between generations, we know that because this is connected to Jesus' ultimate mission, that we can also be reminded, even when we go through those things, that's a part of what following God is like. We're supposed to find our own way of following God, even in that sense of there could be potential danger or loss. God will be faithful and have it be part of the mission. And we can see that God is showing us through Jesus in this story that we should be expecting transition in life, and therefore we should be sharing what's important to us and making room for God's mission and vision that's important in our context, but then also for other people, and even if that means not just having things our own way. That's where that humility, that's where that willingness to set things aside to follow God's ultimate purpose, that's where that comes in. And this sense of Jesus fitting into tradition and generations and timelessness and things passing along, especially as it relates to God's mission over time, is highlighted by another key quote in the story. At the very end, it says, he grew in stature and favor with God and the people. And this is language that Luke's Jewish readers would in particular have recognized, because it was strongly associated with another famous figure in their history and religion. They would know that Jesus is going to be important in a certain way because this quote is relating Jesus to the figure who had that quote said about them in the first place. And that's the person who we read about today in our earlier scripture, Samuel. Samuel is this foundational priest and prophet in Israel's history because he's famous for being the last judge and anointing both Israel's first king Saul and their most important king David. That's why we read in that abridged version of Samuel that Brian was so nice to go through for us, that origin story, we can see that link, and we use that same quote about Samuel that we saw in the passage about Jesus. And that can help us wrestle with the challenging parts of generational transition and being able to figure out how we find our own place alongside other people in God's mission, especially when we recognize it's not about me, it's bigger than me. That's part of the excitement, is I'm being caught up in something that is more than me, goes throughout all history. In Samuel's story, we see that Hannah, Samuel's mother, shows this strong desire. I want to be connected across generations. I want to be a part of something that God is doing. That's why I want to have this baby so bad. But then she also, quicker than other parents, faces that struggle that we could relate to, that you have to let someone that you see as your own go and become their own person, out of your control, out of some of your influence, because she is willing to dedicate Samuel and hand him over to serve in the temple very soon after he is born. That she knows it's not just about that individual bond, but it's about how they both are a part of everything that is happening in God's story. And so that sense of what it's like to see someone go and develop even beyond what you are comfortable with, it hits home even when he's a toddler, not when he's like a teenager or something else that happens for us. It happens really fast. And Samuel's presence also, we didn't read about this much, but it exposes how Eli the priest had trouble with how to pass along the traditions of his people and encourage new people to have their own healthy expression of God's mission. Because, unfortunately, Samuel is there to replace Eli's own sons in serving in the temple. They had bristled against how their father had treated them, and they ended up using their roles in the temple to basically corruptly get advantage for themselves, to mistreat others, to basically embezzle funds, to sexually assault people. They needed to be replaced, and Samuel is in part fulfilling that role because Eli couldn't figure out what it looked like to bring them back into the fold and to pass on those traditions and to see new healthy expressions rather than things going wrong. And so Samuel's readiness to follow God in his early life is encouraging, but it also can bring to mind all of the things that we ourselves can have difficult feelings about when we're trying to be a part of God's family, when we're trying to share our foundations, when we're trying to develop missions that have been led by God, and ultimately when we're learning what it looks like to pass things on to other people with a place of trust that God will be walking with all of us and that ultimately this is God's thing and not ours. We can have feelings of hope in those moments, but we can admit that often it's very difficult to operate in those spaces and wonder how things are going to turn out, wonder how people are operating, wonder when things looked a little bit different with someone else than they looked like for us. And that can cause that pain and distraction, and we want God to come in and help us out with it. But most importantly, while our passages help us get to even those difficult feelings that are natural for us to have as this normal part of ministry, they don't just leave us there. They can give us examples of the challenges, but they also help us to see where there is hope and solution and healing and empowerment that comes. Jesus in particular comes to his parents and his people and therefore also to us through Scripture to show us a way that we can live as God's family, that will move us even from season to season, even from circumstance to circumstance, and even from generation to generation, full of God's love and full of God's purpose, even if we do sometimes face tension and conflict as part of that. And this, ultimately, is the foundation of what God's family business is, and that's what Jesus is initiating and inviting us to be a part of. First, we can see that this passage may often be used to emphasize Jesus' specialness, even at an early age. We often rush to the idea of everyone being amazed at Jesus' understanding and his answers as he talked to the leaders in the temple. And so we say, oh, that must be why Jesus has authority, is because even when he was like 12, Jesus was able to tell the temple leaders what everything was all about. And maybe that's kind of true, but we can miss what actually happens right before that sentence that I think is even more important. We miss where things start for Jesus in the temple. And that's where it says, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, listening to the teachers and asking them questions. That's where things start for Jesus, and I think has the biggest takeaway for us too. Anyone who spent very much time with a kid knows that it is essentially miraculous for a young person to sit and listen to something for 3 days in a row. Right? And anyone who's spent much time with young adults knows that that is not a life stage where we are very inclined to asking questions rather than saying, I know exactly how things should be, I've got the idea worked out, and I'm just going to run off with it. Right? That's a normal part of our development. But Jesus starts with listening and asking questions. And so if the point of why Jesus has authority is actually more about the idea that he is willing to cultivate an atmosphere where there's listening and good questions and mutual learning and collaboration together, that's a different type of authority than just, I know more than everyone all the time. Jesus in authority and example helps us find our place in God's mission, no matter what our different relationships are. Again, because it's not competing about finding out who has the most of God's knowledge, but it's about how all of us participate in the atmosphere of family business that Jesus created by starting equally with listening, with questions, and then with sharing answers that people can build on together, that it's all mutual, and so that new things that develop always happen on solid foundations. And that also, though, if there are obstacles that have been set up from things in the past, that those are taken down constructively so that the new things can be built upon it. And on top of that, this experience of Jesus shows us that God, again, is linking who Jesus is and what Jesus' mission on earth is about all the way up until today to particular types of figures and particular types of values. Today, we have seen how Jesus ministers as an ultimate priest in the tradition of Samuel, teaching and laying the groundwork for ministry that he'll call us to. Last week, in our encounter with Simeon and Anna, we saw Jesus linked to the prophet Isaiah, giving the ultimate vision of God's just and loving salvation for all people, especially those who are normally overlooked and left out. And if we go all the way back to Christmas Eve, when we saw Jesus and his family flee Herod's persecution and go to Egypt, we see Jesus linked to God's ultimate deliverer, like Moses, siding with the displaced and oppressed and giving freedom for a new type of life together. And so, these are all in contrast to roles like conqueror or controller that people could have expected a powerful ruler to have. Again, like Herod and Caesar. That's why we said the Magi went to Herod first, because you would assume if you're looking for a king, you go to the king. You go to the palace. You don't go to the stable. Hopefully we can see that if Jesus is linked to these roles, priest, prophet, deliverer, and that this is what the foundation of what Jesus does for all of us is, that this is an example of the values of God's family business. That's what we're supposed to practice too. We all can have our own roles and values that we need to healthily share salvation life for over time. This is for all of us because Jesus gives it to us as that priest, as that prophet, as that deliverer, and this can be true for all generations. If our goal is to conquer or control or to only know and care about what we're most comfortable with, then we're not going to end up with those healthy relationships and that full experience of God's mission. If we only want things to be exactly the way that we are familiar with, we'll miss out on what God is doing and we'll be left in tension and conflict because everyone will just be fighting over, it's supposed to be how I want it. No, it's supposed to be how I want it. And not how are we all doing what God wants. So when we exist in communities of mutual listening and learning, when we find a way to do new things on healthy foundations, just like Jesus the priest fosters, we'll be experiencing God's salvation. When we follow the vision of having room for more people and sharing God's salvation, that's like how we can experience Jesus the prophet. And when we make the inclusion and empowering of others, especially those who would normally be left out or shouted down, when that becomes a priority for us as well, we experience salvation of Jesus the deliverer. And then we know that God's family business will be thriving and powerful and timeless in our world and bringing transformation. So how can we dedicate ourselves to living this out in ways that any of us can connect with? Last week I went to a community garden meeting. That's something we do with our gardens, and it brings together people from all around the city, and there was a person from Lyndon McKinley's urban farm that was presenting that night. And a lot of people were fascinated that they were able to do so much with the high schoolers. They thought, high schoolers care about agriculture and farming? Like, they all just want to do video games and computers and everything all the time. How can you possibly get kids to care about agriculture? And so they do actually do some other cool technology-oriented things in this program. One of the things he highlighted was that they do fertilizing and pesticides with drones. So I don't know how they do it exactly, but they put it on the drone and then the kids get to fly the drone around sort of like a computer game to treat all of the plants. And so of course people are thinking, oh yeah, like of course if you have drones then kids will want to do that. But then they would say, oh, but if I'm a smaller group, like does that mean I can't connect with kids at all? And the thing is, I think it's true that communities, if they can figure out how to make space for new things, to include different stuff that people care about, that that's a good way to have a sense of connection, if you can share that foundation and include things different people care about. And that's sort of like going back to the Reading Rainbow fireworks family, right? Like, you can have the fireworks with traditional safety, and you can come up with this fancy new way of doing these cool computer contraptions that people were just learning about back then. But it can be really easy for that type of stuff to become a silver bullet, to actually distract us from the things that really make those connections happen. It's not the fancy thing that is most important. It's not then fighting over which fancy thing do we do that will win or lose, because we don't want to get stuck in thinking that there are other solutions than what God's salvation life and family business can offer in all circumstances. What really matters most is cultivating community where you value sharing between people of all different circumstances, of all different interests, of all different skills, just like a family tries to do, like the fireworks family, where not everyone did fireworks, but some did food, and some did music, and some did other things. What matters most is giving time for that mutual listening and learning and building relationships. That has to come first before chasing even any silver bullets. And that's what Jesus as a boy himself did. We've got already a good foundation for this, by the way. Like, I know when I thought about our garden, we have a lot of kids that work with us out in the garden. We've got scouts. We've got high schoolers. We've got kids from the church itself that all come at all of these different ages to participate with us. And it's really rich and wonderful. And we don't have a drone or anything quite like that. At our meeting here in just a few minutes, we are going to celebrate exactly some of those ways that we are finding connection between our community. And I hope that this is something that we can continue to look at and find ways to participate in together throughout this year and going forward. But we have to remember, again, most of all, that that's going to be built on our relationships, on whether or not you think, am I the coolest person? Am I the one who knows everything about the TikToks and the whatever stuff that the kids like? Or am I just someone who says, I'm here to love on a kid. I'm here to listen to what they care about, to tell them what I care about, and to find new common ground together. And you don't have to have a fancy thing or be an expert on what we're doing. All you have to be is a friendly face, maybe a butt sitting comfortably in a chair because you don't even want to walk around or anything else like that, and show that sense of togetherness and relationship. And we see from these types of passages that that's where God brings salvation and transformation most of all anyway. And we can be encouraged by that. And so we'll keep that same spirit of family business and building relationship, not only into our meeting this afternoon, but as we transition now into our time of offering.